This is episode number 781 of the Secret Identity Podcast, and today in What's New, we're going to talk about Doctor Who, Venomverse, and Wizard. Our comics this week will be Kiss number 6, The Unsound number 1, and X-Men Blue number 4. And our summer reading project continues this week with the Judge Dredd case files. We'll be talking about the case files of the Brain Blooms through our Floral Wreath Killer story.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
The Human Torch was denied a bank loan.
This is all your fault, you.
Get that finger out of your ear. You don't know where that finger's been.
Why do you keep staring at me?
You have 20 seconds to comply.
God, clean the whole for fun.
And welcome everybody to Secret Identity. This is Brian Letenry here, as always, with the lovely, the talented, the beautiful Matthew A. Herring. How are you today, sir?
Doing very well. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Yeah, we've got a lot of cool stuff to talk about. I am really enjoying the Judge Dredd, Summer of Dredd project that we are doing. It is a lot of fun. It is fun to read. Now, I've been reading Judge Dredd since the 80s,
but
I got all the comics.
Yep.
I never read most of the 2099 stuff unless they reprinted certain stories here and there. So a lot of these I'm reading for the first time.
Well, and I think that's the cool thing about that. And obviously we're going to talk more about that in a little while, but that you're most of the Judge Dredd stuff is very bite-sized.
Yes.
Like you just have this vision in your head of like these, and there are some epic storylines in Judge Dredd, but those are fewer and farther between than the quick hit.
Yeah.
You know, one issue and done sort of storyline. So it is kind of cool to go through because they all are, they all have to resolve themselves for the most part in a short number
four
of pages.
4 to 6 pages.
Yeah, exactly, which is kind of cool. So we will get into that. But before we get into that, let's talk about Doctor Who a little bit, Matthew.
Yes.
Because Titan Comics is going to kick off an 8-book Doctor Who crossover spanning 4 series on August 30th, which apparently is Doctor Who Comics Day.
They did that, I think, last year as well.
This is going to be called Doctor Who, The Lost Dimension. The Lost Dimension Alpha and the Ninth Doctor Special. Storyline will span 8 chapters and over 3 months, crossing over all 4 ongoing Doctor Who series from Titan Comics, the 9th, the 10th, the 11th, and the 12th Doctors. The first 2 books in the editorial event will lead into Doctor Who Comics Day that weekend, which is Saturday, September 2nd, 2017. So that is Doctor Who Comics Day. Mm-hmm. Doctor Who Comics Day was in the summer last year, but this year it's September 2nd. The Alpha issue will be designed as an easy jumping on point with a story by George Mann and Kevon Scott and art by Rachel Stott and Rod Fernandez. Covers will include an embossed foil TARDIS cover. We know Matt's going to get that one. A photo cover featuring Will Brooks or done by Will Brooks and a multi-doctor mashup by Rachel Stott and Luis Guerrero. So yeah, there's going to be a 8-chapter Doctor Who crossover special in celebration of Doctor Who Comics Day. Now, are you still reading any of the Doctor Who comics
right now? I am not reading any because unfortunately they started coming out way too many. Like when you've got 4 series going at once, I just couldn't keep up with it. I started losing interest and that's where it kind of sucks. But having this crossover, I'm really looking forward to. I will be into that one because I want more of the Doctors. And when you're getting, you know, literally 1 month, you're getting 9, 10, 11, 12.
Right.
And it's like, this is just becoming too much. And you were not enjoying it as much.
You were getting fatigued, Matthew.
Yes, I am a less is more when it comes to my franchises.
Right. Okay. Well, that's good to know, especially since you're a Batman fan and there's 7,000 Batman books out there.
Yes.
All right. Let's see what else we got. Oh, on the Marvel side of things, this fall, the Marvel multiverse will be ensnared.
Oh, no.
By a deadly new species in Venomverse. The 5-issue miniseries is written by Cullen Bunn. Of course it is, because everything now is written by Cullen Bunn.
Yep.
And drawn by Iban Coelho. Eddie Brock, a.k.a. Venom, finds himself trapped in a far-off world with other symbiote-bearing heroes where they face down the Poisons, a terrifying new venom-hunting predator. The first issue will be in stores in September. Venomverse comes on the heels of Edge of Venomverse, a five-issue miniseries launching on June 28th. Each issue focuses on a venomized superhero under the hand of a different creative team. The first issue has X-23 struggling with the Venom symbiote in a story by Matt Rosenberg and Roland Boschi. Subsequent issues feature venomized versions of Gwenpool, Ghost Rider, and Deadpool. Sony is working on a featured film centered on Venom. Tom Hardy has been signed to play the lead role in the film. We talked about that,
yes.
Right? That Tom Hardy's going to be Venom. So clearly, the Venom push has begun.
Yep.
One of the more recent happenings in the new Venom book is that Eddie Brock reclaimed the symbiote. And so then they went back to the original numbering of issue 150, I believe. And to do that, they had to combine.
Yes.
All of these miniseries, because Venom was mostly miniseries over the years.
Yep.
So they're up to 150. So yeah, it seems like Venom is getting a very big push now in the comic book world on the Marvel side. So, and then we have a little wizard news, Matthew.
Let's hear it.
This is by Aaron Conklin over at ICV2. The shows must go on, even if they're not bringing in quite as much as they were before. Wizard World Entertainment reported... Oh, apparently there's a dance party next door.
That's a motorcycle guy with a motorcycle.
Is that really?
Yeah.
It's very loud. I wonder if anybody can hear that.
Yeah, I know.
Anyways, we'll continue on, Matthew. Wizard World Entertainment reported a $1.5 million drop in convention revenue to $3.4 million for the quarter ending March 31st. So they made $3.4 million, but that was down $1.5 million. Company executives explained the drop by pointing out that it hosted one less show during the quarter than last year. However, the company's most recent financial report also indicated that the average revenue per show dropped nearly $100,000 as compared to the first quarter of 2016, despite the fact that it raised admission prices and expanded the scope of its events to attract larger audiences. Now, that's interesting, Matthew.
They are not saying anything to help their case.
They raised ticket prices.
Yes.
And expanded their events.
Had one less show.
And made less money.
And made less money per show even.
Right, per show. Meanwhile, revenues from Wizard World Entertainment's ConBox subscription box business also continued a precipitous freefall as the company continued to turn its focus more exclusively toward improving its live entertainment events. First quarter revenues from ConBox sales totaled slightly more than $74,000, down 80% from what the company achieved in its first quarter of 2016. So now why I pulled that is not because I want to pick on Wizard, but I find it interesting. I have been feeling like the subscription box bubble is bursting. If you remember, there was – what was the first one?
The one that everybody – that I have guys at work that
I forget what
do.
The stupid name of it is. But the first one that came out started a revolution.
Yes.
Right? Now every outlet that has any type of – toys or t-shirts or any sort of swag has their own subscription box.
Yeah.
Horror websites have their own subscription box. Music websites have their own subscription box. Books, you can get
sci-fi
book
yeah.
subscription box. I bought my wife a cosmetics subscription box that she gets once a month. She gets, you know, this kind of thing. So they're everywhere,
yes.
Right? And I feel like that bubble is bursting now. They've now become there's so many of them everywhere that the base of people that you're pulling from that would subscribe to one of these things has gotten smaller.
Yeah, you've tapped everybody out.
And smaller.
Yep.
It's interesting to note that. And clearly, you know, the whole raising the ticket prices and seeing less people buy tickets, that's not rocket science.
No.
It's the same thing of when you raise the cover price on your comics and you have less people buying those comics.
What does that say?
It's a short-term gain because you're making more off of each comic. But less and less people are going to try new books. It's a long-term failure, and that's what Wizard is seeing.
One of the big things that Wizard has done that I don't know if you were aware of is they have a musical guest that has been playing at all the Wizard shows going
on. Like a concert, like a Saturday night concert
sort
of thing?
Gene Simmons.
Oh.
So Gene Simmons has been touring with a solo band and playing at all the Wizard shows.
I was not aware of that,
Matthew. I wasn't aware of that until like 3 weeks ago, and I'm thinking, huh, how did I not know about this? Because I would have bought an overpriced ticket to go somewhere
sure.
and help the company lose $50 less per show.
And the thing is it seems like – I feel like we talk about this every single week, but it feels like the ticket prices have to go up because they're paying too much for guests to come to the show.
Yeah.
And they're making these commitments of guarantees to certain guests to get them at the show because they're trying to get these big names to attract people. But that means that they have to make it up in ticket sales.
Yes.
And it's just not – it's not – the math isn't working out.
No, it's not. It's spending too much on a product that people are not buying anymore. That's – you know, that's economics 101. If it's not working, you can't do it.
And I would imagine in some cases they're making less money on their artist alley tables and their booths because less people are coming to exhibit there. Because when you buy, let's say you pay $300 for an artist alley table, right? So you pay $300. You now know that you have to make a minimum, and this is without travel expenses.
Yeah.
You have to make a minimum of $300 this weekend in order to be even.
Yes.
In order to make your table back. So $300 out of pocket to make your table back. Now, here comes the crowd coming through on Friday afternoon. The autographs for Celebrity A are $50 a pop. By the time that person comes to see the one or two celebrities from their favorite television shows or movies that they are going to pay to get an autograph for, and then they make their way through Artist Alley, they don't have any money.
They have nothing
so
left.
So they're not buying the products of the artists that are in Artist Alley. And because of that, those artists are now going to fewer shows, or they're being very picky about the shows that they do. And so you have less people signing up for Artist Alley. And in some ways, that affords an opportunity for more independent artists to get into Artist Alley, maybe when before tables would be sold out. But they're taking even more of a risk.
Yeah.
Right? Like for me, as someone who sells books at $10 a pop, that's 30 books. I would have to sell 30 books to pay a $300 table. I don't sell 30 books at most shows that I go to. So to go to a show where I know that people are paying a high ticket price and that celebrity autographs are outrageously priced before they even come by my table to look at me, that is a proposition I'm not even willing to entertain.
Yep. And that's the way I feel about it too. I've been looking – I mean I'm only doing 5 or 6 shows this year.
Yep.
And I started looking at the fact that if I open an Amazon store, I am worldwide. I have – $40 a month to invest in it, and I just have to sell 2 books to make my each month to make my market, to pay my bill.
And the thing is, like, forget about you and I. When less artists are buying tables at shows to exhibit, that's less of a draw to your show now.
Yes.
Because now you don't have an artist knocking down the door to be part of Artist Alley because they're not making any money at your show.
Yep.
It just continues to spiral.
Yeah.
Right? So how do you make that up? Well, we'll bring in more big names.
Yes.
Okay, we bring in more big names. We have to guarantee those big names more money. So if they don't make $20,000 in autographs over the course of the weekend, whatever they didn't make, we have to pay them.
Yep.
So in order to do that, we have to make sure that our ticket prices are high enough that we can absorb that hit, but we can't absorb too many of them. So it's just – it's a real rough spot. And I'm not suggesting that Wizard is the only – entity that has gotten into this situation, because I could make the case that I think ReedPop is heading down the exact same. I don't think they've learned the lessons of Wizard at all.
No, until people stop buying tickets, until you see on the website, hey, we've got tons of tickets for the weekend. We've got a lot of Friday and Saturday tickets available. Until then, they won't realize because they'll just keep doing what
they're
doing.
They've created such a feeding frenzy with New York Comic Con now that I feel like that bubble is very close to bursting.
Yep.
It's a tough situation, and you know, there's a happy medium somewhere. It doesn't seem like Wizard has found that yet.
Not at all. Hoping
that they do. But you mentioned Gene Simmons, Matt, and
what
a great segue into our comic book segment, because you are going to talk about the Kiss comic.
This is Kiss number 6 from Dynamite. Now, we have had 6 issues, actually 7. I have 7 upstairs.
Uh-huh.
But there's been 2 issues of the Demon miniseries. And the Demon miniseries has really delved into the entire history of this Blackwell community that these 4 kids have lived in. And this is the issue where the last issue, everything really seemed to open up. To give you a little bit of an update, there is this community in the future called Blackwell that was sustaining a community, a colony of people, keeping them protected, but it was a little dystopian because, you know, you had to fall into line. You had all that great stuff that, you know, you see in Logan's Run, all those things like that. But we've soon found out that the society that they were living on was not on Earth, but it was in fact a spaceship that left the planet Earth. So these 2 kids, and it was interesting because they showed the layout this spaceship where everybody was living was like dead middle, and the ship was miles long of mazes. So it would take you a year just to find your way out. Like if you wandered around,
yep,
it would take you a year, and then you'd have robots that would probably kill you before you got outside. So everybody was under the impression.
It's a tough situation.
Yes. Everybody was under the impression that they were living in space. And the little political commentary in this first couple pages is you see a beekeeper pulling out the bees, and it's sort of a narrative of this is why we did what we did here at Rockwell, or at Blackwell. You see a beehiver getting her bees, and then the next time you see it, there's no grass behind her, and there's like three bees, and they're dying as they're falling off, which is a huge commentary to the bee population dying out, which could mean a lot of issues as this world goes on. And you're seeing that the chemical people at Blackwell really tried hard to make this all work, and they created this community, and then they commuted a spaceship and got up into space. So the kids are watching this going, this is insane. We've never even been on the ground before. We thought we were on Earth, and we never were. And the kids that are now in control of the ship are all wearing the KISS makeup. They all got sort of KISS costumes on, and they're talking to each other going, well, we don't even know what we're supposed to do right now. How are we supposed to figure out what we're doing? We obviously cannot go back to our people who are in the middle of this ship. We need to figure something out. And as they're looking at the map of this, they're kind of catching you up on what has gone on. You're seeing the KISS robots that are the sentries that kind of keep everybody in line and keep them inside and huddled into this little area. And as they're looking at the layout of the ship, they're saying, wow, this is really crazy. This is so big, and we are over here, and what are these right now? So you're seeing as they touch this screen, it is the computer of the ship that is telling them everything that it is. This is a life pod. This is how you get outside. This is how you control the ship. And they're saying, you know what? We need to either get back to our people and let them know what's going on, or we just need to get them there. But right now there's a problem. The ship isn't moving. We've got to go out and fix something. So there's one of the engines that's a little not working right, but they can't go anywhere. And again, it's great because these kids are just, every time they talk about, all right, we're going to do this and we're going to do this, then they look out the window and go, wow, we're in space. This is kind of weird. And they realize that two of them are going to have to go outside and fix this rocket issue that's going on, that's keeping the ship from moving. So as they get out there, what I love is that you have the lyrics to the KISS song Rocket Ride underneath as they start getting out to try to clean it up and get this thing going. And for three or four pages, it's them trying to get this, trying to work it, and not knowing even what to do. They basically have to push a button, but they got to find the button. And as they do, they have to get back in the ship. So they get back in the ship, the rockets start to thrust, and now they are flying towards Earth. And then they realize that they're not only just flying towards Earth, they have popped out of the mothership that has all their people in it. And they're thinking, this isn't good. We just left everybody that we cared about in that ship. We are now flying in space. And, you still have the lyrics to Rocket Ride, but it's great because they're like, you know what? Why don't we just go in and relax, and we'll play some music. So they get up their instruments, they start playing. They've got the KISS poster behind them. And then as they finish up, they're like, well, what do we do right now? They go, hey, why don't we figure out what we're going to do? We came from the planet Earth. We thought we were on Earth. Why don't we set the course and let's go home? And then that is how the issue ends, with them getting ready to come back to Earth. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of things that they're going to come across. There is a trade collection that came out for the first four or five issues. So it's a really good way to pick up everything. If you didn't get it, you get a bunch of great covers. And I'm really loving this KISS comic. I think it's a perfect way to have a story that doesn't necessarily mean it has to have KISS in it, but there's KISS songs that are always influenced and referenced, and you have the look of it. The kids are wearing the makeup. So great book.
I'm glad you like it, Matthew. Yes. I'm going to hop over to Boom now for our Cullen Bunn book of the week. It is called The Unsound.
Well, I have another Cullen book.
Oh, do you really?
Yes. It's Cullen Bunn Day.
So it's called The Unsound, and it is by Boom. This is issue number one that we're going to talk about. Cullen Bunn writes it. It is illustrated by Jack T. Cole. Letters by Jim Campbell. And let's see who the editor is. Eric Harburn is the editor on this one. So we start off, and this takes place in New York, And you start off with a young woman by the name of Ashley, who's a nurse. And she's walking out of her apartment because she's on her way to work. And one of her old neighbors kind of pokes his head out of his apartment and says, it's your first day at the new job, right? And she's like, yeah, I'm a little nervous. And he's like, oh, you're going to do great. And as they're having a conversation, you see behind him in his apartment that he's a complete hoarder. Like the place is just in complete disarray and everything. But he's very pleasant to her and they're having a conversation and she kind of goes along her way. She leaves the apartment building. She gets on the subway. As she's on the subway, you see a guy who has one of the passengers on the subway is a guy who has like different animal parts in jars full of what look like urine or some sort of embalming fluid. You know, just typical subway stuff. And she gets off the subway and she ends up walking to this gigantic medical building that looks like a huge old hospital, and it's called St. Casha. So she goes up to the guard, you know, at the front gate, and she says, hi, I'm Ashley Granger. You know, today's my first day. And he doesn't even answer. He just opens the gate. So she walks in, and she goes up to reception, and the place is, like, empty. It's like a huge hospital that seems empty. She goes to reception. Nobody's there. All she sees is a razor blade on the front counter. And she's sitting there. And all of a sudden someone says, oh, there you are. You know, you're almost 10 minutes late. And she comes in and Nurse Jeffers is the one who runs the floor. So and she's – you could tell she's older than Ashley and she's got no patience for her. She's like, I need to get back to the floor. Follow me. You're late. She brings her in and she kind of gives her the nickel tour, but she brings her right into the common room where all of the patients are. And she's explaining that this place, St. Casha, was founded in 1816. It does short and long-term care for patients of varying pathologies and varying intensities. So, you know, there's people with all different clinical diagnoses that are being treated here, some short-term, some long-term. And she's like the head nurse. And this is Ashley's first day. And she says this place was closed down in the 80s because of lack of funding, but it opened back up a few years ago. And you could tell looking around that it's like somewhat dilapidated, you know? And so you see all the patients are just kind of hanging out in the common room there. She's like, you know, I'm Nurse Jeffers. You know, we've got stuff to do tonight. You got to help me out with meds, all this kind of stuff. And so Ashley is just trying to take it all in. So she's kind of catching the eye of certain patients. She's kind of, she looks over in the corner and she sees three guys in suits who appear to be like administrators or something else. But she sees mostly everybody sort of hanging out and you've got different groups of patients that are sort of hanging out, talking. It kind of has that One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest sort of feel in the beginning of it. There's not much treatment going on. It's mm-hmm. kind of everybody just sort of hanging out there. And she says, you know, hey, when I came in, I found this razor blade. And she's like, man, someone has been leaving those around. It's some sort of stupid prank. Go get rid of it. Put your stuff in the, you know, in the nurse's office there and throw your stuff in a locker and then get back out here because I need you to help me with meds. So she goes in there and she's putting her stuff away. Again, she's still kind of – it's a whirlwind. She doesn't really – she hasn't had a chance to even get her bearings yet. But she's sitting there and she's putting her stuff away and she goes to throw the razor blade away and she cuts herself accidentally. And as she's sitting there looking at it, all of a sudden somebody behind her is saying, the prince is throwing a ball – and you're invited. And she's like, what? And she turns around and she's like, excuse me. And there's a mattress in there, a cot. And, you know, in a lot of hospitals, they have like in the nurse's, you know, room or whatever, they'll have a cot. So yep. If people are working a double, they can catch a few hours of sleep or something. So something's under the covers and this thing's talking to her and it's saying, you know, you'll wear a crown of red. The prince sees you. So right away, I'm like, this is right up my alley. Because it feels a little bit like a King in Yellow sort of thing. So I'm like, I'm down. So she goes over and the blanket's yellow too. So I think Cullen Bunn is definitely giving a nod to the King in Yellow here. But she goes over and she lifts up the covers and it's a CPR mannequin. And nobody's there. And she's like, what the – and it was talking to her. So she's like, okay. So she goes back out into the common room. And she starts talking to some of the patients there. And one of the patients, Claire, comes up to her and says, you know, I'm not like all the other people here. I don't really belong here, just so you know. But, you know, I can tell you kind of what's going on in this place. And as she's talking to her, one of the other staff comes over and says, you know, it's time for your session, Claire. And he brings Claire over to the three guys in suits. And Ashley says to this guy, Josh, where are they taking her? Like, who are those guys? And he says, oh, that's administration. You better ignore them. And whatever you do, don't make eye contact. And there's this kind of ominous feel to them escorting her to this door that you have no idea where it leads. And so that's kind of the theme of this first issue, is that she's noticing all of these kind of unsettling things about this place. And not only just like the state of the building, but the fact that all of the staff seem a little bit off. And it seems like there's something that people aren't telling her. And so she ends up going around and helping give out the medications. And then she runs into another group of patients, and the patients are saying, the prince is calling. So there's more, you know, kind of references to this prince guy. And then she meets this guy, one of the patients, who walks around holding up a paper plate in front of his face. And on one side of the paper plate are two eye holes. And on the bottom half of the paper plate, he has these lines that are drawn that almost make it look like teeth. And he keeps like changing the position of the paper plate that he holds over his face. And at one point, he kind of slides it over his eyes as he's talking to her. But at another point, he's got it upside down. And he's talking about how she's like, can I help you? And he's like, oh, there's no help for me. There's no help for any of us. We're beyond help, and that's why they lock us up here. And she's starting to have a conversation with him until the other nurse comes and kind of takes her away from that. And she's asking Nurse Jeffers, like, what's the deal with that guy? Oh, he's a John Doe. People call him Xerxes, but he's been here since before I even came here. And he says that he's been here since before the place closed down the first time, but that can't be true. And so now you're seeing, like, again, this notion that people get so lost in the system of care that this guy, they don't even know where he came from.
Yeah.
He's a patient here, and they don't even know how long he's been here or where he came from or anything like that. And so she ends up having to go back into the nurse's office and clean up because her hand starts bleeding again. And when she does, she starts hearing voices behind her, and she turns around, and the patients that kind of came up to her in the hallway are standing behind her, and they're talking about, you're going to be wearing a gown of red, and that's the way the first issue ends. And so what you don't know is whether or not the things that Ashley is seeing are real. You don't know whether or not these people are actually there that she's talking to. So they kind of make you question Ashley's own stability, because she sees someone talking to her that's not there. She pulls back the covers, the CPR dummy. You know, she's seeing all these things happening around her. Or is it just that when you go to any new job for the first time, and I'll never forget, like, I used to work in residential care and run group homes. And I remember going for the first time, and it's a different world when you're in a profession where your job is to take care of other people.
Yeah.
And I hope that what Cullen Bunn is doing in this book is not going to follow some of the tropes that you usually see when you read these kinds of stories. Because every time we see a story about anything having to do with people in treatment for drug addiction, for mental illness, for anything like that, you always see these tropes of the abusive staff, the building that's in terrible condition,
the neglect,
the lack of treatment. And there are horror stories of that stuff happening. And that is certainly the case. And certainly in years past was probably more frequent, but that's not always the case. And it bothers me when stories go right there. And I don't think he goes that far down that rabbit hole in this first issue, because I have a feeling there's something much bigger lurking beyond this that I can't wait to see the next issue of it. Mm. So it definitely raises a lot of questions. And you're wondering how reliable of a narrator Ashley is as you kind of start this. But if you are a fan of, I would say, horror, because I feel like this is going to go down that road, then I think you would really dig this.
Yeah.
And again, another book by Boom, where they're just putting out these fantastic original stories with a ton of different creators. Like every time I see a new creator has a book out at Boom, it's like, of course they do.
Very good stuff.
It's just
there.
A place that people are gravitated towards now.
Oh, excuse me. I take up.
Hey, you take your time.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Heart started palpitating.
Don't collapse on me now.
All right. So heading over to the Marvel Universe for a book that I'm shocked to say this. I'm loving it. X-Men Blue.
You're an issue ahead of me, I think.
We are on number four.
Yeah.
Now, the team is the original X-Men of Marvel Girl, Cyclops, Angel, Beast, and Iceman. Now, each of them have a little bit of different weird powers than we might have remembered before. These guys have been displaced in time. They are now in current times, but this is the original team. They were brought back years ago to show Scott Summers, you know, this is what you were like before, dude.
Right.
Before you turned
bad.
Remember
when you were cool?
You looked like this.
You were a nice guy.
We took these five kids out of their time. Yeah. Well, now we can't bring them back, so they're
here. Right. We ruined these kids' lives to, you know, make you a better person, and then you ended up getting killed anyways.
So they are on the X-Jet, and they are flying around, and Jean Grey has Cerebro on, and she's arguing. And you realize she's arguing with Cerebro. She is and the other X-Men are going, this is really weird. You're arguing with Cerebro. That's very powerful. You shouldn't be doing that. And everybody's kind of going back and forth about what's going on, and they're talking about this mission. Now, Cerebro, if you don't know, is the device that the X-Men use to track mutants. And Cerebro has let them know that in Arrow Ridge, Colorado, there is a mutant up there. And they get off the jet, and they all get off they're walking off, and Cyclops is like, well, it certainly is cold here. And Jean is like, you know, talking to Angel as he's flying around above looking for things, saying, you know, keep an eye out for anything different. And then they see footprints. They say, oh, you know what? We might have the person we're looking for. And then as they start walking closer, they find a body laying there just kind of dead. And they see that the heart is now like 10 feet away from the body. And they're thinking, this is not good. If this is what Cerebro was having us look for, somebody or something already killed it before we got here. And then as they're discussing what's going on, a sheriff comes up from behind them, and she is saying, you know, I want to know what you guys are doing here. You've just stumbled upon a dead body that I've been looking for, and I really don't know what's going on. And right now, you guys are like my prime suspects. So Angel comes down and says, hey, I'm Warren. I'm the Angel. We're the X-Men. And she's like, well, I know who you are. I've seen you on TV. I just want to know what's going on here. And my name's Kira Lee. I think I might need your help on this. So she starts looking at the body, and they're looking at things, and she says something about, wow, this I'm looking over to try to find somebody that's got claws. And they all look at each other going, claws? He's got claws? The older guy that you're looking for, he's got claws? And she says, like a mean old grandpa, which obviously is the reference to Old Man Logan.
Yep.
And he's like, yep, he's got claws. Yes to that he's mean, and no that he's a grandpa. He was kind of young. She's like, I've been out here tracking him for days, and I think he's nearby. And she talks about how she was going to get attacked by something that looks like it was Wendigo, and this clawed creature came out of the woods and saved her life. So Beast is looking at this going, well, yeah, that was obviously Wendigo, but why is the heart over here? We don't understand what is going on, and if it's who we think it is, he shouldn't be killing people. That's not Wolverine's MO. And they never mention it at first by word. So as they're going through, all of a sudden they're walking through the woods and you hear snicked. And you look over and you see the three claws. And the X-Men are looking. And you see somebody that is wearing a heavy, heavy green jacket with a hood and saying, shouldn't have come after me. You know, I'm going to give you one last chance. Turn around, go back where you came from, and get out of here. And Iceman's like, it's really him. And then Beast finally says, Wolverine, and the voice says, I'm not counting to three. So he's acting like Wolverine, has claws like Wolverine, and when they start to fight and attack him, they realize it is not Wolverine. But the battle goes on, they're fighting, and Iceman, Bobby Drake, gets really close, he gets slashed across the chest, and you realize that, you know, Bobby always kind of jokes around about stuff, he's kind of lighthearted and doesn't take everything that serious. But he's panicking going, he almost killed me. And as the fight starts to wind down, they get a control of him. Iceman becomes this huge, abominable snowman-looking thing, probably 20 feet tall, comes down and pounds the guy they're fighting into the ice and says, Iceman, smash. And they're looking, they pick him up, and they say, well, he's got a huge healing factor, so this is pretty interesting. So he finally wakes up, and he's saying, you know, they go, Jimmy? And he's like, what did you say? What did you call me? And she goes, your name's Jimmy. We're the X-Men. We're here to help you. And maybe we can help. So they say, why don't we go talk? And the sheriff goes, you know, I got a place that we can go to talk. So they go to a bar, and they're in this bar, and it's great because they're wondering, why is nobody looking at them? It's like this, you know, old mill town kind of bar. Everybody's playing pool, And Gene is saying, well, I got everybody here thinking that there's just we're just normal. So don't worry about it. People are, you know, people aren't even noticing. And they find out that this guy is the son of Wolverine. And he is.
Is that Dokken?
I don't know. It's Jimmy Hudson, I believe.
Oh, I don't know.
Jimmy
it, wasn't
Hudson.
A D-A-K-E-N or something.
Yeah, there was
like
a Wolverine,
was
the, or Dokken, son of Wolverine.
Because wasn't he part of the Dark Avengers?
I think so.
I think so.
So this guy's blonde. He's got the big beard. And he's like, you know, I'm sorry I tried to hurt you. I've hurt a lot of people. I just don't know what I'm supposed to do. All I know is that I'm in pain. And as they're talking to him, saying, you know what? We're going to get you out of here. We are going to take care of you. And as they start to do that, all of a sudden, all the silverware, all the napkin holders, everything starts floating around this bar. And they're like, what's going on? And of course, my first thought is, oh, it's Magneto. And they said, you know, who's doing that? And a voice off camera says, that would be me. And you look over and you have the new Marauders, who are not from this universe, is what it says.
Uh-huh.
The new Marauders. And you get introduced. There's Mach 1. There is Quicksilver, the Guardian, Armor. And I think that is it for the team. And it looks like they are here for him. So that is how that ends. And again, as I'm saying, as I've said about the issues I've read and talked about, I love this book so far. It is full of action. You've got a young superhero team, which I love. They are trying to discover themselves. They know they're in a different area. They know that they're in a different time. The team on this book, Cullen Bunn is the writer. Julian Lopez is the penciler. Inkers are Jose Mazaran Jr. and Walden Wong. Letters by superstar Joe Caramagna, who was upset today, Brian, that he got an Italian grinder that didn't have oil on it but mayonnaise.
Really?
He was very upset. So he posted. I said, well, what if the person that was that put the mayonnaise on was Italian? And he said an Italian wouldn't do that. So Joe was very upset. I'm realizing more and more, and we do know this, you don't upset Joe when it comes to his food.
He is a foodie.
Yeah, you let him.
I mean, to go back to what we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, you let him do your thing, Joe. So again, just a great book. I'm really loving this. And I said this when they relaunched the X-Men before and liked it. I will step off the first time they had that multi-crossover that I have to read 75 different books to get.
But
the story here, and I'm going to love it.
But you're on it for now.
I'm on it for now. And you can be on it too. With a free code.
Oh, holy cow. Are we reading a code?
We have a code. Marvel.com/redeem. FZMJYFZKZLIA.
I love it.
That is your code. These letters are pretty big. So that is your code. You can check it out for yourself. And I'm excited to say I have X-Men Blue number 5 upstairs ready to read.
Very nice.
Yep.
So perhaps another code next time or maybe on the Facebook page.
We could do it. We could do it.
All right, Matthew. Well, you know what time it is. It is time for our summer reading project. And we are, of course, doing the Summer of Dread. And we have been reading the Judge Dredd Complete Case Files, Volume 1. And the last time that we had this segment, we had just finished up the Robot Wars.
Yes.
And today's segment is going to be a collection of different case files, as I think several of our segments will end up being. And we're going to start off with one today that was a little bit funny and a little bit horrific.
Yes, this is a great, great one.
Because you have Judge Dredd who's trying to relax at home, and it happens to be his birthday. And his landlady, Maria, as he's sitting there relaxing, all of a sudden you see this what looks like this head is singing to him, happy birthday, Judge Dredd, singing happy birthday to him. And he's like, Maria, have you lost your senses? Mere possession of a brain bloom carries a severe penalty. So what she has presented him with is it is a combination. It's basically what happened when human DNA was crossed with plants.
Yes.
And they're called brain blooms. And they are essentially mostly plant heads that you can purchase on the black market that will sing songs and that you can kind of train him and stuff like that. So she brought one that sang happy birthday to him for his birthday. And he's like, we had to ban them because of what they're fed on. And the cool thing is they never tell you what they're fed on, but you're just assuming it's like human flesh or something like that, to keep these things alive. And he's like, you have to get rid of that. And Walter's like, arrest her.
Walter, and he's like, so I'm sorry, I was going to interrupt about that, but Walter from this moment on is always going to try to be like Robot Dredd.
Right.
That's become his new thing.
Right.
is before he'd be like, oh, I'm sorry. Now he's like, yeah, arrest him.
Right.
Or it's a West.
Yes, that's exactly what he says. So Dredd's like, you know what? We have to, first of all, destroy that thing, but I need to figure out where they're coming from. And so over the next page or so, you see him talking about how over the next few days he goes and does raids on places where people are in possession of these things, but he's trying to find out where in the world they're coming from. And it turns out there's a block called Tower House that he's going to. And on the rooftop garden, there's a woman named Mrs. Mahaffey, and her nickname is Ma Mahaffey.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if that was kind of where they got Mama from in the Judge Dredd movie.
Oh, could
I didn't
have
know
been.
If that, you know, not, obviously it's not the same character, but anyway, she's a 100-year-old biocriminal. So she's kind of like a poison ivy type of situation. And she has on the rooftop garden of her building just, it looks like Motel Hell.
I was just going to say, she's growing Motel Hell.
She's basically growing Motel Hell. There are just rows, and there's like a dozen rows of heads
and
that are there.
They're all singing.
And they're all singing together, and it's pretty horrific the more that you think about it. And so Judge Dredd, of course, comes in, and he's like, she's like, oh, I can't wait to, I'm going to sell you, blah, 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 blah. And he's like, you'll sell nothing. My voice print identifies your Green Fingers Ma Mahaffey, the notorious biocriminal. And he says, I got to take you in. I'm taking you down. And she says, you know, before I go, could I get one last request? And he's like, yeah, fine. And she's like, I want him to sing you a song. So she makes her plant heads, whatever they're called, brain blooms, sing a song that is like a hypnotic tune. And the next thing that Judge Dredd knows, he's driving away from the apartment building and he's saying, that sweet old lady never broke the law in her life.
Yeah.
She's clearly not the suspect. And he's driving along and he's like, now that that's out of the way, I should arrange a little accident for myself. So clearly she hypnotized him to not only forget that she was the bad guy, but also to run himself into a truck. So he does, in fact, start driving toward a truck on the highway, and the truck swerves at the last minute. So Dredd kind of dumps his bike, but he doesn't get really hurt. And when that happens, he's kind of jolted out of this hypnotic trance that he was in. And so he ends up gathering basically the SWAT team together, the riot team, and they go in there with riot foam, which is, you know, basically set to immobilize people.
Yes.
And so they show back up at Ma's apartment. And when they do, she's going to have her brain blooms do the same thing. But he drowns them all in foam, basically, and ends up taking her down. And that's how he defeats her. So that one I thought was great because it just had that Motel Hell element to it. And I don't – obviously, not all of these say exactly what year they were done in, but I like to think that was around the same time as the movie.
Probably in 78, 79, so it's around then.
It's around the same time as the movie, so that could have certainly been an homage to Motel Hell. The second one, Judge Dredd is out on patrol, and there's a bright moon out, which he calls a mugger's moon. I'm
going to
be busy tonight. And sure enough, there's people, you know, out mugging people all over the place. And this one involves a guy who basically the muggers show up and they're going to beat the crap out of him. And a guy is driving by and this poor victim reaches out to the car and says to the person driving the car, you got to help me. I'm getting mugged. And this guy's like, it's none of my business.
Yep, drives
and
away.
He takes off on him. So this poor guy starts getting the crap beaten out of him until Judge Dredd shows up. And I don't know if this is the first time in this collection, but what we see is him on his gun, on his lawgiver, he dials up the heat seeker.
Yeah, this is the first time you actually see it being used,
which they call a hot shot.
Yeah, because
which
I think
in the movie.
Next story, it's a different one. He's now starting to use different.
He's starting to use the different bullets, and so he fires off the heat seeker, which essentially is a tracer bullet that goes through these two guys, these two muggers, and the third one thinks that he's gotten away. And by the time he gets over to the trash can, the bullet's caught up with him too and kills him and takes him down. But Judge Dredd is not done there.
Oh, no.
Because when the civilian is thanking him, the civilian's like, yeah, when that guy drove off and left me here with these muggers, I thought I was a dead man. And Dredd's like, okay. So he catches up with the guy who didn't help this person and ends up pulling him over. And the guy's like, well, it's not a crime to, you know, not help in a situation like that. He's like, yeah, but it is a crime to be emitting such pollution from your car. And what happened was the guy who was the victim when this guy in the car drove away, he had grabbed onto the tailpipe of the car and a piece of it broke off.
And he burned his hand when he did it.
He burned his hand when he did it. But now the car, the muffler's broken, so it's giving off more emissions, and Judge Dredd hangs him up on that. So he basically has him – not only does he have him get out of the car, but he says this – for gross pollution of the atmosphere, the vehicle is condemned to immediate destruction. And he blows up the car. So he leaves this guy basically standing next to the smoking wreck of his car as he drives away.
And it's like a 20th century, turn of the century. So
right.
It would be a car from the 70s.
It's like a classic car.
And the thing that I thought about this, I got two things out of this story. First of all, when they were talking about like the car giving off emissions before you realize that he broke the muffler, I thought it was from the flesh that burned onto the muffler when he grabbed onto it.
Okay.
So I was like, this is going to be sickening. And the other thing, this story and the next two or three are ones that I really saw what an influence Judge Dredd as a strip became for comic artists. There's I forgot his name, but he did the Star Wars Dark Empire series, Cam Kennedy.
Okay.
And I was reading the first two or three of these and thought, this looks like Cam Kennedy's art, but it's not. But you're seeing that not only was Judge Dredd influential with a lot of the creators, but the creators working on it at the time were influencing this guard that was coming up a few years later.
And the next one is basically a comic advertisement.
Oh, this is the best.
Because you have Judge Dredd get alerted by one of his informants whose name is Max Normal.
Yes.
He's a guy who looks like the dude from the Avengers. The British Avengers.
He's got the pinstripe, the bowler hat, and a cane, and a umbrella.
And he's saying, you know, word on the street is that Sam, that runs the soda bar across the street, is selling old comics to kids.
Oh my gosh, we can't have that.
And Judge Dredd is like, that's like the lowest form of crime.
Yes.
He said, after one or two, kids get so addicted that they can't give them up, and the price goes up and up. So selling comics is illegal.
It's like a drug.
Yeah.
Which we know it's true.
Yep. So the story then becomes about him breaking up this comic book ring and tracking down the guys that are doing this. And he once again, in this particular story, uses the hotshot to take them out. But the best part is, like, I'm thinking to myself, like, okay, so is he going to, like, just give the comics to the kids or something? Like, or is he going to keep, you know, what's going to happen to the comics afterwards? So later back at the Grand Hall of Justice, after Dredd takes down these, you know, this illegal comic book seller, it says, thanks to Judge Dredd, we've wiped out the biggest comic ring in the city. I think you should see the comics they were selling and understand how valuable they are. And so the grand judge is saying, Judge Strong, put one of those comics slugs in the viewer. And of course they do. And it's a 2000 AD comic.
And they're all raving about how amazing
it
is.
And Judge Dredd is like, so one of the guys, I think it might even be Dredd, is like, fantastic stuff. No wonder those lawbreakers were charging a fortune for it.
Yeah.
So yeah,
Perfect shameless plug.
The next one is a pretty brutal story.
Yeah.
Where you have, and again, it seems like in the 2000 AD universe, there are a lot of people who just want to kill judges all the time.
Yeah.
Anytime they get a cool weapon, anytime they come up with a decent plan, they're like, let's kill one of the judges.
And you've got to find a way to make it creative. And this guy has decided, I'm going to do it the alphabet way.
Yeah. So this guy has a solar gun where basically it sucks up the solar rays and it turns them into a very powerful laser beam. And so they're hanging off the side of a building and they're saying, oh, who's that? It's Judge Carter. Okay, well, when he gets over here, fire. So he does. He fires this laser rifle. And when he fires it, it basically immediately disintegrates this judge into a pile of ash. So, of course, Dredd gets called to the scene. And there's a note for him. Hey, Judge Dredd, you got till high noon. You're friendly hitman. So they're coming for him. He's on the top of everybody's hit list.
Yep.
Which
he's alphabetical in this one because the first one to go was it Abel? So you had Judge Abel, then Baker, then Judge Carter.
Right.
Judge Dredd.
And now it's Dredd. So now it's his turn up on the list. So he decides the only way I'm going to defeat this gang that is using a solar gun is I'm going to go to the Weather Congress and I'm going to have them change the weather so that it becomes cloudy out. And when it becomes cloudy, these guys can't power their solar gun. So that's, in fact, what he does. He goes and he has the clouds come out so they can't power their solar gun. But the criminals end up breaking into the Weather Congress. And when they get in there, this one guy drives his car right through the window. Yeah. And as Dredd is chasing him in there, he's running through. And he runs into this room where there's a scientist there with a chimpanzee. And he's like, I need to get through that door behind you. Get out of the way. And he throws them out of the way. and he jumps into this thing and he closes the doors. And as soon as he does, he turns around and he sees that there's an ignition countdown happening. Well, it turns out that he went into the Weather Congress and he ran right into a research rocket that was being sent on a 3-year mission to orbit the sun to see if the rocket could protect them enough where they could set up a base out there.
Yeah.
And so the chimpanzee was supposed to be the astronaut that was going in the rocket. Instead, this guy put himself in there.
And what was great was he had to get a weather warrant.
Yes.
The weather warrant to change the weather.
Yep.
A lot of this is very much like Magnus Robot Fighter, the original series. Like you had, you're controlling the weather, you're controlling society. A lot of the feel for this really reminds me of that.
Right. And it's very much a commentary on bureaucracy too, yep. Right? Because everything requires a warrant. Everything requires this, that, and the other thing. And so there's so many laws and so many rules and so many different things that at any given time, a citizen could be doing something illegal and not even really know it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So we get into the next story, and the next story involves a killer by the name of Mr. Buzz.
Yep.
And so it starts off with Judge Dredd. He hunts down this murder gang and he kills a bunch of these bad guys, and he finds out that their leader, Mr. Buzz, is holed up in this apartment building. So Dredd says they're holed up in this apartment on the fourth floor, but we can't get them out. And Dredd's like, oh, there's one way. And he says, Dredd to Control, slap a demolition order on the flea pit at 3rd and Grover. So he first orders a demolition order on this building. And then someone's like, has something happened to the building? Yeah, it just burned down. And then he freaking burns down the building in order to get this guy out. So he flushes this guy out of here. And this guy jumps in a car and he gets away. The whole conceit of this whole story is that here's a guy who has no eyes.
Yes.
And he has big, like, elf ears.
Yep.
And his name is Mr. Buzz. And he comes running, jumps down a side street. He ends up attacking one of the judges and jumps in a car and sort of gets away. And you have Dredd chasing him down. And he's chasing this guy and he follows him into this place that's really dark. And this guy's about to get the jump on him. And all of a sudden, Judge Dredd realizes that because this guy doesn't have eyes and he's got really big ears, then the way I'm going to defeat him is to create really loud noises. So he dials the lawgiver to explosive bullets rapid fire. And he ends up firing off a bunch of them around this guy to the point where he completely disorients this guy because of the noises going off around his head. So that's how he takes him down. So a lot of these stories end up being, what is the weakness of this quirky villain? And as soon as Dredd figures out the weakness, that's how he takes him down.
And what I like is you see, and this is making me think what in England was going on to make this story come out. To get one guy, he's going to burn an entire building down.
Right.
Like, I'm going to burn this building down.
Yeah.
I don't care where it spreads.
Put a demolition order on it.
Yeah, we're going to burn it down.
We're going to get this guy by – so it was like by any means necessary,
yes.
Right? So now we go over to the next story, and you have this one is about smoking.
Yes.
And you have on the control panel of Dredd's mighty bike, he sees he has a nicotine detector.
Yep.
So he ends up tracking down this guy who was about to light a cigarette. And the guy's like, how the heck did he even spot us? And because he has a nicotine detector. And, you know, across the way, there's actual like serious crime going on because there's a bank being robbed. And as the bank is being robbed, you have a guy who's in there lighting up a cigar or something like that. And so they're in there and one of the tellers hits the silent button to call the judges to the place. And this criminal guy, the leader, ends up taking his cigar and burning this guy's hand with it. And so when Judge Dredd shows up to the crime scene, what he notices is that there is this cigar on the scene. And that's his one piece of evidence. And he's saying, you know, it's still got the band on it. Every cigarette, every cigar has a Mega City brand on it. And that cigar was bought from this particular store. So you're seeing him doing some detective work here where he basically tracks down where did this cigar come from? He ends up saying to the clerk at the store, I'm going to use this place to set a trap for these guys. And so there is like a and apologies to you, Matthew, a genuine wooden Indian.
Yes.
Over in the corner of the smoke shop. And so what Dredd does is he moves that and decides to stand in its place because it's kind of shrouded in shadow a little bit. And so what ends up happening is the criminal, who is the leader of this gang that just robbed the bank, they're going to get out of town, but he needs to get some cigars first.
At the smoketorium.
Yeah, the smoketorium. So he goes to this place to where he gets his favorite cigars from, and he goes in there and he says, I forget when he goes to light his match. He's like, basically, what did you do? Oh, hey, why did you move the wooden Indian over to the dark corner? And all of a sudden he strikes his match and Judge Dredd's there because he struck the match on Judge Dredd. And Dredd says, he did it on my instructions, lawbreaker. And you just struck an officer of the law.
Yep.
So, of course, he takes down a couple of the guys, but the main bad guy gets away. And as he does, he flees across town. And Judge Dredd ends up chasing him to the mega city Smoketon?
The Smoketorium.
Smoketorium.
I believe it's the Smoketorium.
The Smoketorium. Yep. You're right. The Smoketorium. So basically in Mega City, there is a place where all the smokers have to go.
Yes.
And that's the only place that they can smoke in Mega City legally.
Much like our society now.
With casinos.
Casinos and with like the smoke shops.
Yes.
You go in and smoke.
Actually, you're right. There are places now where literally you can go in there and smoke inside the place. So, but it's like casinos too. That's basically the last bastion. Yep. So, but what happens is you go in the smoketorium and the smoke is so thick and heavy and toxic that everyone in there is wearing a helmet where they can only smoke their cigarette or their cigar or whatever, because to even be in this place is toxic.
Yes.
So this poor guy runs into the guy with the cigar, runs into the smoketorium without a helmet on and immediately is overcome by the toxic fumes and collapses. And that's how Judge Dredd ends up taking him down.
With a moral, smoking can damage your health.
Yep. So that's how he gets that guy. And then the last one that we're going to talk about tonight starts off with you have people running down the street screaming, it's another Wreath killing. Let's get out of here. We might be next. Because apparently there are a couple of murderers on the loose in Mega City. And what happens is whenever they kill their victims, they leave a floral wreath on them. So you have Dredd sitting there. Yeah, take him away, driver. There's nothing we can do for him now. You know, we found this on the body. That makes it the 20th floral wreath murder. It's tough, man. Like, which just tells you, like, there's so many different gimmicks of these gangs and murder in like Mega City.
Piles. Yeah.
So like, oh, this one used brain blooms. Oh, this one used this. We're going to use wreaths.
Yeah.
So Dredd decides, you know, where are you going to find this maniac? And, you know, Dredd decides he's going to sit out and do that. And so he goes to the macro analysis computer at Judge's HQ at the Justice, you know, headquarters. And he says, quickly, Mac, give me all the information about the Wreath killings. Now, I think this might be the first time that we see Mac.
Yeah.
Which is like basically like the bat computer for Judge Dredd. So he goes in there and he basically says, I want you to run every piece of data about these Wreath killings that are happening and let me know, you know, what happens. So he does. And all they can come up with is that all of the victims of these murders were transported by the same ambulance. And he's like, that has to be it. The killers have to be in the ambulance. And sure enough, he figures out that these killers are driving an ambulance to the scene of their own crime, killing the person, and then being the paramedics there as well. And so Judge ends up tracking him down. And when he tracks these guys down, they see him coming and they decide that one of them is going to dress up as the victim. Except when he does, Judge Dredd comes in to go check on the guy. And the guy decides the other bad guy is sneaking up behind him with a axe. Because they're using like a – it's not even like an axe. It's like a piece of cutlery.
Yeah. Like a chop – like a – I know what you're talking – yeah, because I see it right here.
But in any case
– I'll think of it.
They come after him with this hatchet thing. And what Judge Dredd does is he like steps out of the way and tosses the guy so that the guy loses his grip on the weapon that he's wielding and throws it into the head of the other guy.
Yes.
And so basically kills his own partner. And then when in that exchange that happens, Judge Dredd drops his gun. So the other guy picks up his gun and he's like, oh, what are you going to do now? I got your gun. What's going on? And well, I guess I'm going to shoot you now. And he goes to shoot him and the trigger won't work.
Yes.
And that's when Dredd explains, well, it's only programmed to accept my print and it has a self-destruct mechanism on it as well. And so, of course, the gun blows up in the guy's hand and Judge Dredd tosses a wreath on him. You know, the citizen says, "Oh, how can I thank you? Don't bother, citizen. It's thanks enough to see these maniac wreath killers share their own wreath."
Yeah.
And that's the way that that one ends. So
we also now end with yet another part of our society, guns that have recognition from the owner.
Right. Yes, so exactly. It only recognizes Dredd.
Judge Dredd has created all of this.
So those are your case files for this week. Now, in our next segment, we're going to talk about the next story, which starts off with the game show You Bet Your Life, and we're going to go through the story that starts with CompuTel. So that is your homework for the Summer of Dredd, not only to get caught up on what you might have missed, but also to get up to the CompuTel story, mm-hmm. because that is what we will be discussing next time. So there you go. That is your Summer of Dredd segment for this week. That is going to do it for this episode of the Secret Identity Podcast. So for Mr. Matthew A. Herring, this is Brian LaTenry signing off. Have a great rest of your week, and we will talk to you in a few short days.
Bye-bye.
The rest of the comic publishing world may finally be arriving to the party, but Drive-Thru Comics is the one that started it all. The first downloadable comic shop is still leading the way when it comes to digital comics. Featuring hundreds of publishers, excellent prices, and top-notch customer service, Drive-Thru is a great experience all around. Another thing that sets Drive-Thru apart from a lot of other digital comics platforms is this. When you buy a comic, you own it. You get a watermarked PDF file that you can read on your laptop, your tablet, phone, or any other device. You choose how you enjoy the comics you buy. So head over to drivethroughcomics.com today, and on your way to checking out, download a free issue of Secret Identity.